I'm ready.
All right. Good afternoon. It is 3:08 p.m. on Wednesday, July 20th, 2022. I'll call this meeting of the Duval County Election Advisory Panel to order. First matter on the agenda is a roll call. Robert Maldonado, Chair, Duval County Election Advisory Panel.
Daniel Henry, Advisory Panel.
Robert Phillips, Supervisor of Elections.
Jeff.
And absent at this time is Nancy Chrisman, but we do have a quorum. Thank you, sir. Second item on the agenda is the approval of our last meeting's minutes, March 16th, 2022. Those were distributed via email, and I believe everyone should have a copy.
Approval of the minutes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The meeting minutes are approved without edits. The third item on the agenda is our Supervisor of Elections update. We're happy to be joined by Mr. Robert Phillips. So, Mr. Phillips, I know there's a number of items you'd like to go over.
Well, as usual, whatever questions you guys have, I would be glad to answer, but I'll just kind of give you a brief rundown of where we're at in the process right now. The books close for the primary election on Monday, July 25th. The vote by mail ballots for civilian and military have already been dropped. As of today, we've already received 4,700 vote by mail ballots back. The logic and accuracy test will be next Friday, July 29th. That is open to the public, and that will be at 1:30 in the afternoon at the Election Center. That's the time that we publicly test and then seal the machines. We will begin opening and tabulating the vote-by-mail ballots on August 1st at Monday. So the public inspection time for that will begin Monday, August 1st at 8 a.m. And once that's done, we'll proceed with any ballots that we've already received by then. Poll worker training is wrapping up. I think this is the last week of poll worker training. And then we can start finishing up all the assignments. And what Mr. Clements emailed to you guys today was just different outreach efforts we've been using. We've partnered with the local sports franchises. One of our outreach coordinator, Mr. Clark, I was going to ask him to come today so he could kind of give you a better rundown of what we're doing. But he's actually also one of the trainers, so he had a poll worker training class now. But he just got back from Denver. He's also getting his national certification, and he presented this white paper to the Election Center, which is the National Association of Election Officials. And it basically outlines what we're using for volunteer recruitment with the local sports franchises and things like that. He got a lot of good feedback from it. Actually, I don't think anybody else in the country is doing anything like that. As an example of such, I brought the local jumbo shrimp season schedules that they used with our I think they put a few things in there about registering to vote. And I know he had mentioned something when he got back that we're going to be doing something in conjunction with the Jaguars the Sunday prior to the National Register to Vote Day, which would be after the August election but before the November election. And this I have a copy of for you as well. This is a copy of the mailer that we sent out to voters whose vote-by-mail ballot would have already normally expired before this year. This actually went out. I don't remember if we had a meeting before or after this went out, but it actually went out before the second special election. This went out in January, so that people would have a chance to request their vote-by-mail ballot for the year. This is a...
Can I see that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know, because we had talked about that. You didn't remember it. Yeah. And this is a new little thing that we're doing. We started doing this with the special election, and it was very popular. In every library, we have voter registration stations, and so once books close, we pick those up so that people won't continue to drop voter registrations in there, or maybe accidentally drop a vote-by-mail ballot in there or something we won't get. But because our vote-by-mail, I mean, because our register-to-vote materials are gone, we go ahead and put these out there now, which so people who come looking for some material, this is there. It tells you all of the early voting locations, the how and the why for voting on election day, just different information, directs voters to our website. And we've gotten a really good response on it, and so we're going to continue to do it. It started off, again, I got to give credit to Greg, who's our outreach director. It was his idea. And so this is the size that it'll be. And because kind of the demand for them is increasing, we'll print more and more of them, it seems like, every election, because groups will ask for them and we'll start handing them out. And basically anywhere we go, he does a lot of voter registration drives. He's been doing a lot of different outreach with Spanish-speaking groups and voters with disabilities based on our express votes. So, and I know my report's kind of all over the place, but that's just kind of how things are going right now. You know, just trying to keep track of everything at once. So we did have our budget presentation, and Mr. Hogan asked for another allotment, asked for another $800,000 to buy more of the new express vote units. And so we believe, I've heard on the grapevine, it hasn't actually been 100% approved yet, but I've heard that we're probably going to get that. So that will allow us to deploy more of the express votes in the early voting scenario. That'll help out with the ballot on demand supplies and things like that. So that pretty much, I'll just open it up to any questions you guys might have. Yes, that's why I wanted Jeff to include that, because I knew that would be a topic. Thank you for bringing that up. With Senate Bill 90, which actually passed last year, but it wouldn't really affect voters until this year, there's a new requirement. Anytime they do an address change, a party change, a request by vote by mail ballot, whether that is over the phone or online, anything like that where they're not face-to-face, we have to verify their Social Security number and their driver's license number. Well, we can't verify it if we don't have it. And so we did a search of our database, and there was about 34,000 voters who did not have that information. Most of them, and this was exactly what I expected, were older voters who never have any changes, who vote continuously, but they may have always showed up at the polls. They may have not voted by mail because, like example, I registered in 88, okay? I've never missed an election. But if I didn't work there, my information wouldn't be on there because I've never gone through the driver's license and changed it. You know, when they ask me, am I registered, I say yes. I don't update any of my information that way. So it does tend to be voters who have been registered for a lot longer. With the onset of online voter registration, motor voter, things like that, people who do address changes, who have had party changes, they naturally kind of have had that information added to the database all along. So that's why when we did that search, it wasn't surprising that we only had about 34,000. Now, unfortunately, the environment that we're in now, as soon as we sent out that notice, it was immediately met with a lot of suspicion. And so we tried to do press releases, and I talked to several of the media people, and it's funny because each one of the media persons, this is always a little frustrating to me too, so you might want to strike this from the minutes.
or it's a secret.
Their first question is always, well, if you don't do this, are they going to be removed? And my answer is, where in the notice, where in the press release did it say anything about anybody being removed? This is purely for the voters' convenience, just to make it easier on them. If they don't want to respond, there's no penalty. We gave them a self-addressed stamped, we had a postage paid envelope that we included just for their convenience. So it really was just an effort because, again, we knew that the people who would be the most adversely affected were voters who've been registered for a long time and who have just been, constant as the Northern Star. So that's who the target audience was. So far we've gotten I don't know exactly how many have come back. But I know Mr. Hogan has told me that the phones have really been lighting up since we sent them out. So there has been a big response to them. So. Well, see, that's the thing. If they go to their website, they can look and see their status. That'll tell them they're registered. Okay. It's kind of a catch-22 because we will also get voters who will go to the website and they will say, I can't request a vote-by-mail ballot. What's wrong? Well, the reason they can't is because they don't have that verifying information. So they're registered, but they can't take advantage of the website. So that's, again, why we were reaching out to them. So we were trying to be a little proactive instead of, once we got into the it was either be proactive and reach out to them now or wait until we got into the election cycle and people start complaining that they were not able to request a vote by mail ballot or something like that. And the last thing we would want is for somebody to not be able to and then get close to that deadline to request and not be able to request one because we don't have the verifying information. No. Absolutely not, because none of that has any impact on that. When you go to vote in person, the only requirement is you show your photo, signature, ID. Okay. And like I said, that's why so many of these people who don't have that information probably have been voting in person for all of these years and it's never affected them. So it doesn't impact their voting status at all. It's just a convenience for them. It'll allow them to take advantage of the online system. Things like that, and be able to make a request over the phone. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Supposed to be speeding up. What volume can you handle with these new voting machines? Be a lot easier, and
time will tell. It's one of those things where we have to see it go through a major election cycle first, because really, if you've ever gone to early vote, you'll see that the biggest backlog is the voters actually having their ballot printed and waiting for it. They can go to the eVid and check in, and that will take just a few seconds. And I could, I've got 4 eVid check-in stations at least at every early voting site, so I can check somebody in and send them down to the next station, and then check somebody in and send them down to the next station. Where the bottleneck is waiting for the printer to print that information, spool up that printer. The ballot inspector gets the ballot, puts it in a secrecy envelope, calls out the ballot style, and then you, as the voter, you've got your ticket, and if you have that ballot style, then you say, hey, that's me, and then you get your ballot. With the express vote, it's just a piece of paper about this size for this election, and it's sitting right there on the desk, right there next to the voter, next to the inspector. So as soon as they key in the information, it zip prints it automatically, and then they can give this to the voter and direct them to the express vote. Now, for one, voters actually have to want to use that. If they don't want to use that, then they're not forced to. But I think the more people use it, it's kind of like a interesting article I read today about, I read an article earlier this week about electronic vehicles have just passed the 5%, the magical 5% point of sales, which means the early adapters have done it. Now it's starting to go mainstream. So I kind of look at the express vote like that. The early adapters, the people who want to try new things, the people who are not, intimidated by the technology, they'll probably jump right to it. Are voters with disabilities who are the original target audience for it, because at its core it's a voter assistance terminal. They will adapt right to it. It's the other general voting public that's maybe more leery. So the more that are out there, the more they see other people doing it, it'll just get, it will naturally progress to be being more and more popular. Like I said, we're actually, it's really kind of funny because a lot of the complaints we get, there are people that are worried about it being a touchscreen. It's still not a touchscreen. It's just a touchscreen interface, but it's still a paper ballot. Everything is still a paper ballot. They're still 100% auditable. There's no voter information on the actual ballots, just the voter selections. So this'll allow us, like as we go into the August-November election cycle, instead of having one or two in each early voting site, we'll be able to have four or five.
So maybe do some PR with some
trying. Yes, sir.
I can say that I used it during the last election, and it was seamless and quite easy.
It's going to be a little bit different because, again, the last election was just one choice.
Yeah.
You know, I think in the primary election, people will be – they'll go through it like that. Then when you go into November and there's several referendums, that takes a little longer. So.
And to your point about voters not being required to use this system, is that being told to them
absolutely.
On the front end and that's
absolutely.
Being made clear?
Yes.
And poll workers are trained?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Yeah. As a matter of fact, it's kind of funny. If you go back and you look at the use for the February election, at the Murray Hill early voting site, one of the poll workers was actually standing at the front door and just saying, hey, do you want to try it? And within the first couple hours, we had a few hundred people that used it. I went out to the beaches later on in the afternoon, still the first day of early voting, and one person had used it towards the end of the day because it was just kind of sitting there in the corner and the poll workers weren't really encouraging it, right? So that made a big difference in how it was perceived, too. So,
anecdotally, the Murray Hill location was very popular in terms of its use during that election.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of candidates were there when I went by there. Yeah.
A few questions I have, and then I'll recognize Mr. Henry. You touched on poll workers, training, and polling locations. I was wondering if you could expand on numbers. You know, how are things looking as far as poll workers? Do you have all the workers you need? How are the locations looking?
Yeah.
Any challenges there?
As a matter of fact, I can give you an update on that. Polling locations, we actually, with the reapportionment and the redistricting, we went from 199 polling locations to 186. We gave the opportunity to each one of the council members. I invited each one of the council members, both in rules and the neighborhoods committee, and through email to all of them, to come to our site, and we could go down and like break down all of the different changes and everything to them. The only one who actually took advantage of it was the rules chair, Councilwoman Priestley Jackson. So actually, it looks like right now we still have a few more days of training to go, and we're running a surplus of about 117 poll workers right now. So that's good. I know that's not going to probably last because a lot of those probably will drop out, but you know it's always better to have more than less. So,
great, Mr. Henry,
can I be a poll worker?
Absolutely. You just have to be nonpartisan.
couple questions. Like you said, they're going to be probably all over the place. But more on the letter that was sent. I got a call, ironically, this morning from an older voter. She's like 75, and she was asking about this letter. And she was really confused about it because she wasn't sure why it was sent and what it was trying to do. And she said that she had a couple of her friends that live on our block that got the letter that were mysterious about it and just threw it away because they just didn't trust it. And I know we've had previous discussions about how it would be great for the supervisor to be proactive, so I appreciate the press releases to kind of affirm to its authenticity. But whenever you're doing these types of letters in bulk, because I think the universe was somewhere around
34,000.
34,000. has Supervisor Hogan ever thought on, like, going on radio, TV, like, This Week on Channel 4 or Melissa Ross on WJCT to talk about, hey, these letters are about to go out before they're sent, so that way there's a consciousness that it's about to happen before it's sent, so that way you avoid having to rapidly respond to reporters asking questions?
Yeah, I'm not saying that's a bad idea. I don't know with everything that would go kind of how the scheduling would work, you know, like if you can always do that prior to every, you know, like we're about to have sample ballots drop in probably next weekend. Now everybody, we've actually been doing sample ballots for a long time now, so people actually are used to them now and they're looking for them in their mail. So that wouldn't be something that would be like that, but I could definitely see that.
And I mean that for like the major things.
Things that are like out of the ordinary, things that we don't like do every
Like cycle. In the next month or so, because it's going to be my next question, when you drop 600 plus thousand new voter ID in the mail.
Yeah.
A lot of people, unless they're really engaged in politics or election law, don't realize because of redistricting, their precinct may be changing and they're going to be receiving this ID in the mail. And I can tell you, I've been voting. I'm young. I've been voting for 18 years and I've never used mine once. So I might not even pay attention to it. And having these public advisory type of interviews or precautions that I'm sure a lot of these news organizations would be happy to cover if it's around election time would go a long way in trying to curing some of the mistrust that's naturally out there because of everything that's happening nationally.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I'll definitely bring that up to them. That was kind of the intention of the press release, is to get at least some media coverage, you know, before we actually dropped them. So that I got responses from 3 or 4 reporters.
It's been my experience a lot of times reporters will respond to something when, particularly with something like this, when they get a call and they think it's something wrong, it's an interest story. So
that's correct.
So yeah. It'll come in with that tent. So you're inevitably having to respond to that perception of something negative, as opposed to being able to say, hey, this is something that the office is doing as a precaution. We don't have to do this, but we're doing this. And in addition to that, we're providing this paid envelope for you to be able to return this application. And this is a service to you. I think people would appreciate that. And it's not a disservice to say that, sorry, you guys did this because it was good. I just hope that these kind of thoughts kind of come up. Because inevitably what happens is when you send these out, even regardless of whether or not it has an official seal, you have older voters in particular that look at that and they're like, I've been voting for 30, 40 plus years. I've never had an issue with this. Why do I have to provide my social security number or my ID?
No, I understand. And you're exactly right on the press angle, because like I said, the first question from each one of them was, if they don't do this, are you going to remove them? Right. And that was immediately their angle to go towards it. So proactive is always better than reactive. And so I appreciate that input, and I will run that up the flagpole to the boss.
Okay. Yay for the 800K. How many machines does that equate to? Because I think you told us at the last meeting, but I forgot how much that was.
Oh, let's see.
FYI, I'm not giving Robert a hard time.
It's another 200.
We have this back and forth all the time.
No, it's about another 200.
Okay.
It's about another 200.
So that will, how many will that end up being? I know you said you guys had enough for the early voting sites, so that will get you coverage for all the precincts?
Well, no, we already have one, and we already had enough for one in every precinct. Okay. And we had, I think, 2 in every early voting site. This will allow us to deploy more for early voting. So 220 sites, that would be at least 10 per site, but I don't think we'll deploy 10 in all of them just because of spacing requirements and
just
things.
Just for the record, I think you just said 200 sites.
I'm sorry, 220 early voting sites, 200 express votes would be 10 per site, but not every site has the space to handle that many. So it'll allow us to deploy enough and keep some in reserve.
So places like Brighton Brooks and Murray Hill
probably have 3 or 4, whereas someplace like Pablo may have 5 or 6. And downtown, we'll put about 6 downtown, too.
Oh, cool. Right in
the right, front. Yeah, because space limitations downtown are bad. And so I would actually rather them use the express vote downtown because it gets in and out. They'll get in and out faster.
That would make your life a lot easier, too.
Well, I'll be at Imeson, so it's fine.
Everyone else's life easier. How much did they're sending the 34,000 letters cost?
Not very much, about $7,000.
And that includes the cost for the prepaid envelope that you sent as well?
Yeah, that does include the postage for the return postage, because I don't know how many we got back, so I couldn't give you that until we actually got them back. But it was $7,000, which I say is not too bad, but at the same time, that's because it was 3 separate pieces. It was the letter, the application, and the return envelope.
So it would have been less if it was, maybe it went right through my head.
It would have been, if we did something like this,
yeah,
which was just a little informative piece, it would have been a lot less, but then it wouldn't have had the benefit of giving the voter something that they could have the actual application that they could return to us.
What kind of went into the thinking of including, I'm going somewhere with this, but what went into the thinking about including the envelope with the paid postage in it?
Convenience.
Okay. So the reason why I asked that question is I've always expressed a desire for the supervisor whenever people's vote by mails expire to let them know, thank you for doing that. But I've always wanted them to also include the ability for them to send it right back in the mail with paid postage. And Supervisor Hogan has always said he's never wanted to do that. So this is the first time I've actually ever seen him do that. So I was just curious to see why this is different.
It's a little bit different because this is basically a one-time shot. And you're dealing with a pretty small universe of 34,000 people. When you're doing vote by mail, when we send out, if we send out, because previous supervisors have sent that out, they sent out the vote by mail request with a folder or with a enclosed card, but the voter would probably still put a stamp on it and send it back. What we found is it just led to a lot of duplication of effort because we would do that and then a candidate or a party would go along right behind us and do the same thing. And then we get another request back for that voter from a different agency. Like, for example, just the other day I had an email from a voter who again was thinking about fraud, but he had received something in the mail. He had received something in the mail that had our return address on it, and it had Mike Hogan, Supervisor of Elections, 105 East Monroe Street. But it was sent from a political party in Tallahassee to encourage them to request their vote by mail ballot. So it's another one of those instances where it did not come from us, but it looked official. And it was supposed to come back to us, and they were leery of it. And so, again, we run into a lot of that, especially with vote by mail. So that would be the one distinction I'd say is probably different, because it just adds a lot of double work for staff to do that. So,
but doesn't that kind of lead to the fact that essentially you're subcontracting out that service to campaigns and political organizations to do it for you?
Well, if they choose to. I mean, they're going to do it regardless of whether we do it or not.
Okay. Not to beat a dead horse. The reason why I'm asking this question is there are about 97,000 voters of all parties that are about to fall off the vote-by-mail list in December.
In December.
And
yes.
We have two major citywide elections that are occurring in March and May.
Yes.
And I can guarantee you there are probably going to be a lot of older voters that use vote by mail that are going to be completely clueless that they're not going to receive a ballot. And we're providing this type of service to a universe that is predominantly older, like you said, for updating their voter ID. I don't understand why we wouldn't do the same for vote by mail, because it follows the same conclusion.
I will say this. We are already planning on late December, early January, a mailing to those 97,000. So there is still time to design it. So we are already planning on doing the mailing, and I can see where you're coming from, and I will definitely bring that up. Because it is also, you know, this will give them everything, but it does direct them to the website. Mr. Hogan likes sending them to the website because it pretty much...
It's easy.
It does it automatically. The voter can make sure that it was done. They get a confirmation, and then it goes right into a request file, and staff doesn't have to, you know, actually do the manual entries and stuff like that.
Can you include a QR code for people that are smart to just, like, scan it?
We're actually... believe it or not. Since
sorry, I shouldn't say smart. No. Computer literate.
I just had a discussion this week with Greg about the QR code when we do the thing for the Jaguars. They're just going to, on the big board, they're going to put a QR code up there.
I think I saw one on one of the things in front of you, too.
Awesome. On this one? Yeah, but that's for the Florida Theater. Okay. That's for the shrimp. But they're going to put a QR code on the big screens for voters that it doesn't matter what section you're sitting in. You can just point at it and click. And the debate is what site do we want that to hit? Do we want it to just hit our homepage? Do we want it to hit specifically vote, register to vote? Do we want it to hit whatever? So that's kind of what we're knocking around right now.
Well, if you were going to be using a QR code for the VBM mailing, I think the easiest place is to go directly to the page where you click on the proceed button to start putting in your information, so that way people don't have to do multiple clicks. The more further away it is, the less likely they're to...
That's true, but they also may be doing registration, too.
Sure.
It's 2 days before, you know, National Voter Registration Day, so...
I didn't mean for the... I meant for that.
Yeah. My inclination is... Oh, for this. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a no-brainer. My inclination is the homepage, just for the broad advertising. You know, we do the Jaguars things like that. We are using a QR code for our special assignment people who are going to all of the different polling locations that changed. Mm-hmm. So instead of... Because, you know... Lots of locations may have changed and things are different. Instead of the special assignment person just sitting there with a stack of papers and a map of, you know, where the closest precincts are, they're going to have a QR code that they can just, you know, scan and show to whatever voter it is that comes up where they're supposed to go.
And they're going to be there for the primary and the general?
Yes.
Great. For the entire time of early voting hours?
Not early voting, election day.
Election day hours, I apologize.
Yes. Election day, yes.
So 7 to 7.
7 to 7.
When do the new voter ID cards come out?
In a perfect world, they would probably be dropping right now, but probably no later than next week because books close on Monday. So we'll pull in, you know, more people for, you know, last minute changes and things like that. So we'll probably get them out by the end of next week.
Two questions. They're fun. This is going to be random. I was on Facebook and I saw an ad from the Nassau County Supervisor of Elections Office.
Uh-huh.
And she just created a mobile application for voters in her county to be able to use it as a one-stop shop to either check the candidates that are on, dates, polling locations, contact, waiting hours, request a vote by mail ballot, And it was the first time that I'd seen a Florida supervisor actually create an application for their, a mobile application for their office.
Like an app on their Okay.
So I didn't know whether or not you'd heard about that or ever thought about that, because I just thought it was pretty creative. And if
we did some, last year we did some digital advertising with the Times Union, to where, like, if you're on Facebook or wherever, or the Times Union page, then our digital ads would pop up. It would take you, you know, a click would take you to our website. I've talked to our IT guys about kind of doing an app before. Don't really know what and all it would entail. So, again, that's something that we've kind of talked about, but haven't really, you know, kicked beyond the discussion stage. So,
would you ever ask our office? Because they're all part of the same association anyway, yeah. So I doubt that Supervisor Org is not going to talk to Ms. Atkins.
Oh, no, they talk. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
I just thought that it was worthwhile because it's another way for us to be able to kind of get information in people's hands. You can push out alerts to people, and it's a convenient, nonpartisan way for you to be able to get things out.
I do not disagree.
Last question. I saw the response to the federal lawsuit that's going on for the city redistricting maps, and it said that you needed the case, whatever way it decided, solidified before, I think it was either November. And I was curious to see how you kind of came up with the timing on that.
Again, just the amount of time it would take to go back, put all of our old polling location, I mean, put all our old district lines back in place. It took several weeks, you know, going through it this year with the reapportionment. It's definitely not something, you know, that you want to rush, especially when you consider you have so many days out ahead of the ahead that you have to have all of your ballot styles configured and things like that, and all that depends on the precincts. Precincts depend on the council lines. All of that. So it was kind of like taking that and walking backwards, the amount of time it would take. So,
but that's based on the city using the current lines, not necessarily the new
map. No, if we had to change them.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying, if we had to change them.
Okay. So because if you're like starting from like scratch.
If you're like starting from scratch, right. Because from what I understand, they can't go back to the old lines because it's been 10 years. They would basically have to start from scratch.
Well, thank you.
And I'm not a lawyer.
I know you're not a lawyer. I saw the report and I was like, I'm going to ask him that question.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Okay. Oh, you're talking about the state election, the one just appointed by the governor.
Yes.
Okay. From what I understand, it is not a quote unquote police force or anyone who's going to be at any of the polling locations. It's basically just an investigative arm, so that if someone were to report cases of voter fraud or election fraud, then this is the branch that would be investigating it. Yeah.
And is that under the Secretary of State's office?
Under the
or
Secretary
is
of State's
Attorney
office.
General, Secretary
yeah.
of State?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. From what I understand, that's under the Secretary of State's office, and they would have a couple of FDLE investigators assigned to them. So.
Do they work with you or do they work absent you?
Seeing as we've never had any interaction with them yet, I would say that probably it would be like right now in case there's any evidence. In the past, if we have had any cases of double voting or fraud or like we had with the petitions, we turn that over to the state attorney's office. I would imagine now going forward, we would turn it over to them and the state attorney.
Is there guidance at the Secretary of State or Division of Elections has given supervisors to how to deal with that?
Not yet that I've seen. So
for the time being, you'll just keep referring to the state attorney's office?
Yes.
And it's my impression that they haven't even been staffed up yet. I think they just named a head last week or this week. I do have a question on voting registration. If you could just talk about that generally, how's that been going? Has there been any, changes in trends as we approach the elections, or is it pretty steady?
The statewide trend is still third-party registrations are outpacing the other two political parties. Even in Duval County, if you look at the numbers, the number of third-party registrants has dramatically increased. Have not been seeing a huge run-up to the numbers. Books close on Monday. We're at 645,000 now. I would anticipate probably by November we would be around 660,000. That's just a guesstimate.
Anything else?
In November we'll come back and see how close I was.
Yeah, we'll make a note to get that on the agenda.
Not to haze you, Austin. Do you have any questions? I know we kind of commanded the time.
Kind of soaking up the first meeting. And
for sure.
Yeah.
Mr. Phillips, you have any legislative updates for us? I know that's a bullet point here under your section as well.
Well, except for the legislative that we just went through, where I mentioned, we had the city council did vote to approve the new polling locations, the new precinct lines. That'll all be. I will say that this election coming up, it's going to be different. Because it's a primary election. So you have Republicans, Democrats, and nonpartisans that are voting together. You have the special election for sheriff, which has four Democrats and one Republican, which means that every Republican, Democrat, and nonpartisan ballot will have party candidates on it. You have the Congressional District 5 district is a universal primary because no Democrats qualified, so it is three Republicans that are running. So in Congressional District 5, every Democrat and nonpartisan ballot will have three Republicans on it. You have the school board referendum, and the last little fun fact was the special elections for City Council District 7 and City Council District 9, even though we have the new precincts in place from the new City Council redistricting, the charter says any special election has to take place on the old lines. So I have one precinct that's now in District 2 that was in District 7 that has District 7 candidates across all three, Republican, Democrat, and nonpartisan, because it's unitary, and I have, I think, at least one in District 8 that has the District 9 race. So voters, and this has been an emphasis during poll worker training, or at least for me when I'm training managers, is if a voter has a question about their ballot and they're thinking maybe they received the wrong ballot, just look at the ballot header, and that should tell you.
That just means you got a whole bunch of different ballot variations.
I think there's 45 different ballot variations. That took me that's when I was home, working from home, checking those.
Are you feeling better?
Oh, I'm great. Yeah.
Good to hear.
Back in 2 weeks.
That moves us on to old business. The only item I see is the express vote equipment purchase. I know we were slated to have a meeting in May, so this may be a moot point, now. I think, your office was going to provide some additional financial information about the costs. And
yeah, I remember that. That was you guys were going to
support.
Thank you. Support the additional purchase, but I think we're going to be able to get it. So.
Okay, and that's something we can certainly include in our report.
Just another interesting fun fact. I just thought of this. It was 20 years ago that you guys were actually. AP, I think, was formed 20 years ago, and I had an email from Preston Haskell today that asked how many of their original recommendations from the original election reform task force were actually implemented, and pretty much all of them were. So it's just...
Was he on it back then?
He was the chair.
makes us feel even.
After the 2000 election, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, improving since then, right? So if there's no other old business, we'll move to new business. This is the adoption of our annual report. Jeff did us the favor of sending around a draft. One note, Jeff, if we could include on the meeting section just the dates that we met and that we will be meeting this year, just specificity's sake. And then I think in our previous meeting, we discussed attaching all of our meeting minutes and handouts and things, you know, to the report. A question I had is if myself as chair or any of the other members want to make edits to the report or additions, is what's the process for that? Is this something I can work on my own? Is that something I need to do in conjunction with the rest of the panel?
Probably that's something you're going to need to do as in a noticed meeting.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
In order to change anything. I mean, you can direct me to make changes today,
mm-hmm.
explain what you would like included or changes in wording or adding or subtracting, whatever. And then you vote on that and I can make those in conjunction with you. We can talk it over. But if you wanted to take it home and then make some more changes later on, then you're going to need the group's consensus to make that official.
Could we presumptively, what you said, approve what changes today and then authorize the chair to make additions that he or other members may send to you?
Well, then you're getting into a gray area of delegating your corporate authority to one person to.
That was a thought.
No, they're pretty strict about that.
I think the only, and I didn't have anything major, just perhaps in the sampling of topics section, maybe splitting them up by topic. If there are ones that have, you know, security-related issues, for example, or fraud-related issues, getting those under one heading, things about voter registration all under one heading, just to kind of make it easier for the council members to, pinpoint things if they are looking to the report for reference or anything along those lines. But that was really my only addition, and aside from including the minutes, the meeting dates, and then I think you covered our, you know, where we're at as far as membership. And
when you say the meeting dates, where it says December 2021, put the specific day of the meeting.
Yeah.
December 8th or whatever it
was. Yeah, just okay.
Can we also include the visit that we did to the Imerson Center?
It is the seventh bullet point?
Yes.
The last meeting.
That was your March meeting. Yes, I can mention that you went out there.
Sorry, no, I misread, sorry.
But you did not take a tour.
What tour?
Exactly.
We just want to be able to see what the facilities look like. Plus, we got to actually test out the Express machines.
Now, are there any edits or additions to the draft that Jeff's sent around? Not, we could motion to adopt. Pending the changes, we can do that today as well.
Motion to approve the draft 2021-2022 annual report with necessary changes.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And then probably something I should know, Jeff, but what is the mechanism to get this to City Council? Is it something you'll send yourself? Is it something that...
Transmit it to the council secretary, and then it goes on council agenda, City Council agenda, as a communication.
Does it matter that we're technically late?
Another piece of new business that I just thought of was the election of officers for this panel. Believe we're coming up on that. I feel like I've been chair for about a year now. So I don't know if that's something we want to schedule for one of our next meetings, or I think, Austin, we kind of typically like to rotate chair and let everyone get a chance, you know, to act as chair at some point. So I think in the past it's been a one-year thing, and then we kind of cycle through. So
your next meeting is in September, so I'll put it on the agenda.
Okay, great.
And Ingrid, Robert, and I have all been, what did I say,
Robert? Mm-mm. Robert can't be.
Ingrid, Bobby, and I have been chair.
You would not want me as chair.
Yeah, I think that leaves Mr. Pringle, Austin, or Nancy. So there's also a vice chair and a secretary position that are largely ceremonial, I think. But
one of us is not here.
Yeah, yeah. In the case of an absence or something like that. So, so if you know, something to consider for our next meeting, if you're interested.
That's a good question. Normally we don't have that many people submitting applications. Get a couple maybe, and we give ours to the council president, and then it's up to the president to decide if they want to. Obviously the mayor and the supervisor handle those.
Who still has vacancies?
I believe it's a mayoral vacancy currently.
As of Mr. Quickle's appointment, we have two vacancies, both mayoral. We have, let's see. Henry, his second term expired in April, so serve until replaced, and
same duck.
It could be replaced. let's see who else expired. Ingrid's been around for many years. She is a mayoral appointment, so has served out more than her two terms.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I say potentially four vacancies then, mayoral vacancies.
1, 2, 3 mayoral and one council president.
Okay.
I believe that we share them. If we get one into the council office and we don't have a vacancy, I think we share it with the mayor's office. We got this. We don't have any vacancies, but if you're interested, here's somebody.
Are there term limits? I know some commissions, there are term limits on how many times you can get reappointed to something. So does this board have any term limits on its members?
Two terms.
Okay.
Full terms, yeah. And then if you're appointed, say, as a replacement for somebody in the middle of a term, if you serve less than half of a term, then you get two. Your interim is more than half of a term, that counts as a full, and then you get another full.
Do you know mine? Because ironically, I think I finished the term of Terrence Freeman at the time.
You were first appointed in 2016. A of 2016.
Trying to see if I'm a real lame duck or if I have a... Yeah, when he was working for Bowman. Because I was a, I think I was an Anderson appointment at that point.
I'd have to go back and look and see.
But it is doable because I served two partial terms prior to my current term, which is now a full term. And I've been told that I could potentially serve another full term if I wanted.
Senior member at some point.
Yeah, I'm 20 years, yeah.
Yeah, I show you as being eligible for reappointment.
Okay. And I guess there's really no, you know, is it possible to send a reminder or you know, to the mayor's office or to his board liaison or something along those lines? Obviously, we like to act with a full board. And
I know that the mayor's board and boards and commissions person has changed a couple of times in the last year. Cycled through some folks.
Is there any other new business from the members?
Can we ask the board pass a resolution to make that recommendation to the mayor's office?
Why not? Resolution is to notify the mayor's office of the vacancies on our panel, correct?
Yes, in their years of their vacancy and strongly encourage an appointment to set seats and to review the applications of the members of the public that have submitted an interest to do so.
You could either do that in the form of a resolution, or I think you could just ask the chairman to write a letter.
Reference?
Whichever way you would.
I don't mind writing a brief letter. Yeah.
Yep.
Get that drafted. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I will draft something and then send it to you, Jeff. It'll just be a paragraph or two. You know. Okay.
Over to them.
I believe that concludes new business. Great. Now we're on to public comments. I do have one speaker card. Ms. Philmon? For recording purposes. Yes,
sorry,
ma'am.
About that. No, so Linnell Philmon, my address is on file. Actually, it's a comment and a question. If I understand correctly, Mr. Henry was saying about to communicate better with, you said you had 34,000 people who needed to update their Social Security number or Florida ID. Out of that 34,000, do you know about how many were seniors? Are you able to answer that?
I do not know. I could find out, but yep. I do not know.
He had talked about Melissa Ross and something with the press. I don't know about y'all, the seniors in my family, if you find some way to communicate through AARP, churches, our 19 city senior centers, those are already, you know, city entities, but also pharmacies. So, you know, places where people might work in conjunction with y'all to get that information out, because he's saying people are getting things and they're throwing them away because they're not trusting what they're seeing, when in fact, you know, this is information that they actually need. The other one was actually about the letter. I just want to make sure I understood, because you had provided an application with the stamped self-addressed return envelope. Was that the only way that they could actually communicate their information and update it, or were y'all willing to take it via phone, or if they went to the voter registration site, were they able to update it there or just via application?
Well, they wouldn't be able to do it by phone, because that's kind of the point. They don't have... You can't, if you don't have the information where you can verify it, then, you know, you can't do it. But if they were to drop it off anywhere, you know, if they want to drop it off at the libraries and our drop boxes, if they wanted to go to, if they just, you know, fill out a new voter registration application on election day when they go vote, yeah, all that's acceptable.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Any other public comments? We're going.
I was?
Yeah, I just pulled it.
So I truly am a lame duck. Okay.
And Mr. McGowan's our former chair, so good to see you.
Can't stay away. Oh, God.
Seeing no more public comments, our next meeting is at 3 p.m. on Wednesday, September 21st. Sure we'll have some good news about our elections. And at 4:08 p.m., I will adjourn. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. I do now.